This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
My guest in the studio is Valerie Murphy. She's a pastor and the author of a new book called Dancing with My Daddy about her relationship with her father and also what she's learned about her heavenly father as a result of exploring that. Hi, Valerie. Thanks for coming into the studio.
Hi, Katrina. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Now, I have to say, you know, as I read your book, I mean, your father's story was uncannily similar to my grandfather's.
Yes.
Both were soldiers in the British Army. Both were with the 51st Highland Division when they were captured at St. Valery in 1940, marched to Germany, spent the rest of the war in captivity. And additionally, you know, there were other little things. They both spent time in India. They emigrated to Australia after the war. And they both died in the same year, 1970. So
Isn't that amazing?
It's not surprising that I felt a real connection to your story.
That's wonderful.
It's a little uncanny, isn't it?
Oh, it is not only uncanny. I have never met anyone before that's had relatives in that particular battalion, regiment. And so when I did my research, I mean, I knew nothing about all of this war stuff when I first started to write this book. But then when you said, my gosh, that's the same as my granddad.
Yeah.
I was just bowled over, and it's an amazing connection.
Yeah, it's a little surprising. Now, how did this book, Dancing with My Daddy, how did it come about? How did you actually think, well, I think there's a book that I need to write here?
Well, do you know, when I was a teenager, I wanted desperately to become a journalist.
Mm.
But you wouldn't believe it, in the 1960s in Adelaide, because I didn't want to do university, I wanted to do more of a, you know, hands-on course, I went to the local paper, the Adelaide Advertiser, and they weren't taking girls that year, would never happen today, would it?
No.
And that writing instinct has been in me ever since. And of course, I speak as a pastor, but I've always wanted to write, never thought that I could. And then years ago, I was taking my children to the movie Titanic, and it came up on the screen, this magnificent white ship, and I got this major flashback to when my family emigrated from England to Australia and coming around the corner at Southampton Docks and seeing this amazing big ship, the Oriana, and it came flooding back and I wrote it all down.
Oh,
someone read it and said, you should write. And, you know, as people do, oh, you should write a book. Well, that's a long time ago now, and it's been a great journey, but boy, it was harder than I thought.
But it is a beautifully, I have to say, it is a beautifully written book. When pastors write books, you know, the sound of the writing, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not, but your book is beautifully written. It's written like a writer. Let's go back to the beginning of the story about your father, and just firstly explain what happened at St. Valery.
Well, St. Valery was a battleground, of course. Many people would have heard of the 1939 conflict at Dunkirk, when the Home Guard evacuated thousands of soldiers from the mainland of Europe back to the country of England. And these British forces had, of course, a rear guard that fought to keep the enemy away while they got away. And of course, my dad was in that. And of course, your grandfather was too.
Mm.
And when that was a successful campaign, the Prime Minister, Winston Churchill, moved them down to a place called St. Valery on the coast, a little coastal fishing village in France, where they were meant to do the same thing again. But because of political pressures, Winston Churchill actually surrendered all of these men to the General Rommel at the time, and they marched them thousands of miles, I believe, or hundreds of miles across Europe, put them all in prisoner of war camps in Germany and Poland, and there supposedly they stayed till the end of the war. But my father, being who he was, actually escaped seven times. Thank God he decided to not give up after time number six, Katrina.
Yeah.
I would not have been here.
Wow. Yeah, it's really amazing. I guess something that I felt in your book was this sense that of, I guess, abandonment. These soldiers felt it being left behind. And that was something they carried their whole lives, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And I've done so much research in the final years of writing this book about the 51st Highlanders in this particular battle and how abandoned and rejected they felt, but also how that plays out in any arena of war. We could talk about Afghanistan even, and there are certain soldiers there that would feel abandoned by their government, rejected. They may carry that on in their lives and their relationships, and it may even play out in the generations to come.
Mm.
And of course, that's what happened until I met a heavenly daddy who was very different to my earthly daddy. And then I started to write this book, and it began probably as a book about an abusive father, because of course he had the classic symptoms of post-war syndrome and would take out his anger and his rages upon his children. And even when we emigrated, that journey to Australia was so much, there was so much of his personality went into that.
Mm.
I remember times when he would dissolve into melancholy in front of a one-bar heater in the dark in the cold of England with just a lit cigarette and talk to no one for days. And they were the classic symptoms. But what I found out when I started to write the book is that every father has those areas where they love their child, and you can discover those areas too. And that's what I did. Mm-hmm. And it ended up being a great book, from the writing perspective, about a father who loved me deeply but didn't know how to show it.
Yes, yeah. I guess in the book you do talk about the tough times, the depressions, the fits of rage, and I can't really imagine what sort of impact that had on you as a child, but there was also moments of compassion and tenderness, wasn't there?
Absolutely.
Tell us about one of those times.
There's a little chapter in the book in the old country. There are three sections. Talks about England, talks about the journey on the ship, talks about the emigration to Australia when I was 10. And in the old country, there's a chapter called Try a Little Tenderness. And of course, it's the name of a song that Michael Bublé does now, of course,
yeah,
from the Glenn Miller era, which my dad just adored, love music. And of course, that's from the title of the book, Dancing with My Daddy. He would dance me every night on the dance floor of the Oriana, around and around.
Oh, that must have been a magical time.
It was magical. Mm. But when I had this accident, as you brought up to me just now when we were talking, on roller skates in England, and I was knocked out, had a concussion, my dad was the one who was stroking my head with a cold cloth as I awoke. The tenderness of who he was came through at that time. So the book is actually full of all sorts of different types of story. Mm. It's not about the war, but it does take into account what happens to us, the negative experiences that actually can make us who we are and from which we may need healing.
Mm, exactly. And I think that's come through very strongly in the book, that there was this love and this compassion that I guess mimics our Heavenly Father.
Absolutely.
The way he cares for us.
Absolutely.
But there's these other sides as well that may not. So my guest in the studio is Valerie Murphy. She's a pastor and she's the author of a new book called Dancing with My Daddy. And we've been talking this morning about, I guess, her personal journey and how reflecting on that has helped her to understand God. And so we talked a little bit about the old country, but the next step was you emigrated to Australia.
Yes.
As a 10-year-old.
Yes.
You must have passed through some amazing places.
Oh, we certainly did. There's a whole section in the book that talks about them, but two of my favourites, we passed right through the Suez Canal, which of course these days on a passenger liner you can't actually do.
Right.
So we had, you know, the little boats coming up and selling us things. We had an amazing experience in Yemen, in Aden, where my dad was just walking along and I was following him, or so he thought. He took what he thought was my hand. Of course, it wasn't. It was a little beggar girl from the street who desperately wanted to catch this white man's hand and go off with him. And Dad thought it was me. And of course, I went up to him and said, "Oi, that's not me, Dad." You know. And out of that comes the whole feeling of, wow, fatherless little girls everywhere. Girls who long for a father image that really, even with an earthly daddy, honestly, he's imperfect. They can only find perfection with their heavenly daddy. Mm. And that's the whole thing of the story.
I just feel, what must that little girl have thought when your father dropped her hand and held yours?
I've often thought of that and been in tears. I was in tears writing that.
Yeah, yeah. Now, when your father came here, I guess he had experienced, he'd been in India, so he must have had some experience of what it's like to be different and be an outsider. But I was wondering, how did he adjust to his life here as a new immigrant?
Well, of course, even though we were English and you would think we would seamlessly adapt to the Australian way of life, it's not the way it goes. Mm. It was culture shock. Mm. And he was promised a job from his company in England, and we were sponsored by the government. We were the original 10-pound poms.
Right, yeah.
We even have a photograph of the receipt in the book to prove that it really was 10-pound poms.
Yeah, right.
And so he travelled right across Melbourne from the hostel where we were put up, which is now a refugee place.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it is. But it was a hostel then for Commonwealth-sponsored immigrants.
Okay.
Travelled right across Melbourne to Nunawading, where he was supposed to have a job with a company, and there was none available. Oh. And he'd been brought 12,000 miles on a pretext. And again, the rejection and the abandonment came back to him from the war.
Yes.
And, of course, that reinforces itself every time things like that happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially as the provider of the family and trying to carve a new life, it must have been quite devastating. What was it like for you, though, as a 10-year-old?
As a 10-year-old coming out to Australia, fantastic.
Mm.
You were the centre of attention when you came to the school, mind you. After a while, you had some funny little quirks that people would poke fun at.
Yeah.
My brother and I, he was 15. I was 10. He and I had a competition about who could lose their English accent the quickest and become an Aussie. And so that was quite fun. But of course, the experiences of being the new kid in the class, having along with other migrants in the hostel, friends from all over the world. Wow. Incredible widening experiences.
Now, you were still really, I guess, quite young when your father died.
19, yes.
Yeah. What effect did that have on you?
Well, of course, that then reinforced this whole feeling of being abandoned, which tends to get passed down from generation to generation if it's not dealt with. And so, of course, there was always that I'm now looking for love in all the wrong places type of syndrome. And hopefully I'm going to write about those kinds of things in the future. But I love to paint pictures with words. And what I love to do is to put someone in that position in order that they can then reflect and then put in place some think about this kind of points and steps in order to go away and say, well, you know, what is there in my life that even though I didn't live through the same experience as this, I can actually put to place so that I can grow and live, you know, a more whole and healthy life.
And I guess the book is kind of like a devotional where, you know, you're sharing one experience, but then you're, I guess, pointing people to ask the questions that they might need to ask in their lives. But I guess looking back over it, the fact that you were only 19 when he died, and that was 1970, it means this book is really the product of 40 years of reflection.
And unbelievably so. I can't believe it's that long.
Yeah. How have your feelings about your father changed over that time?
Well, I started out writing a book about an abusive father. But you see, it's not. When you read the book, it's not about an abusive father. It's about the comparisons that were in my dad that actually are in my heavenly daddy. And I've discovered that he loved me to distraction, but just couldn't tell me so. That he wanted to do the best for me, but his way of doing that was to give me some things and for me to assume that he loved me. And many people are in that boat. When I started a relationship with God, my heavenly daddy, I discovered that I now have a perfect father role model. But I could never make my earthly daddy into that. And as much as we try, even if we have a great dad on the earth, he can never be all that we expect as a little girl.
Yeah. And so how have your, I guess, your feelings about your heavenly father, how have they changed as you've better come to understand this earthly father that you've dealt with?
Well, he's been the one that's helped me to come to terms with it. There's been a lot of forgiveness. There's been a lot of water under the bridge, a lot of years. But when those memories kept flooding back and I had to write them down, it was like I had to deal with every one. I have spent many an afternoon, Katrina, in front of my computer looking up websites about the 51st Highlanders, hearing their poems and their songs and the things that they've put there about how they're angry and they're distressed about being abandoned. And I've determined that, you know what, I go to my Heavenly Father about that. Because we can also carry those kinds of abandonments, rejections and feelings. But life is good in its authenticity, and that we can bring that before our Heavenly Father and say, God, help me with this. Help me to forgive that person. Help me to go back there and to realize that wasn't meant for for tripping me up, and that you can make all things good.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, obviously the book is, it's really aimed at women and every woman's, as you said, every daughter's journey with her father.
Yeah.
But there's a sense in which there's something in here for dads too, isn't there?
I've had some guys read this book and come and tell me that one particular guy came and said, I've read this book in one sitting. I've never done that with a book before. And the reason that I did that was because I was learning things about how to treat my daughters. And for that, I'm truly grateful that that comes across. So no, it's not just a book for girls.
Yeah.
It's a book for the guys as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's been lovely to talk to you, Vali. Thank you for sharing your story so beautifully. It's so heartfelt, you know, in the book as well. And it's been really nice to hear a bit more about it today. Thank you. That's Valerie Murphy, and she's the author of Dancing With My Daddy. You can find out more at her website, dancingwithmydaddy.com.au.
This has been a Hope 103.2 podcast. For helpful articles, station news, videos, devotional emails, and more podcasts, visit hope1032.com.au.